You know, I once read an article about some weightlifters. You know, they were competing for the Mr. Universe contest. You know what those guys look like? You know, kind of like me. All right? And I remember somebody took a survey and they asked these weightlifters for Mr. Universe contest. They said, if you could take a pill, if you could take this pill, and this pill would guarantee you that you would win the Mr. Universe contest, would you take it? There's only one condition on taking this pill. If you take the pill, you will die 1 year later. And they asked these weightlifters if they would do it. And you know what the response was? Half of them said they would take the pill anyway. Now that might seem kind of silly to us and crazy to us, but you got to admit that is commitment. I mean, that is really commitment. There you go. Okay. Commitment, that's right. You know, Frank Shorter is one of these long distance runners. And he said, he talked to someone about people running in these marathons. And he said, if you want to run in the marathon, he says, all you got to do is 6 days a week, run 7 miles a day, and on the seventh day, run 12 miles a day, and you'll have a good chance of winning the marathons that he runs in. So again, we're talking about commitment here. Can you imagine running that every single day? You know, there are all kinds of people out there, and these people are committed to all types of causes. You know, I live in Washington, D.C., and there's a fellow there named Mitch Snyder, and he's this political activist, and Mitch likes to starve himself for various causes. Any kind of cause, Mitch Snyder's out there willing to starve himself. I mean, he's almost died a couple of times from these times when he was starving himself over this or that or, you know, whatever. And you know, I read an article and he says after like 6 weeks, you start, if you wash your body, you start tasting the soap, you know, in your mouth and so forth. And I mean, whatever, as crazy as it might seem to us, I mean, you have to be committed to sit there and just not eat for 2 or 3 months so you almost die for some kind of political cause. And yet Mitch is all the time starving himself for something. You know, I went down to the White House a number of months ago, because I don't live that far from it. And there was some lady, there was some woman who was out there protesting. You got all these anti-nuclear protesters, and they're standing in front of the White House. Now, this lady, I mean, she was all bundled up. I mean, she looked like a bag lady. I mean, really kind of skanky and scrungy. I mean, stinky. I mean, she was gross. She was really gross. And she stood there with this sign against Reagan and, and against nuclear war and so on. And the thing that amazed me about her name was Mary, is that woman had been standing in front of the White House for 6 years. I mean, out there on the sidewalk for 6 years. I mean, she looked it. I mean, she looked like she had been out there for 6 years. I mean, it was gross. I mean, she grossed me out just looking at her. And she showed pictures of where the Marines had beat her up and this and that. Rain, shine, winter, summer, whatever. Mary was standing out there in front of the White House. Now, again, I mean, imagine 6 years. That goes back to 1981. Think of what you were doing in 1981. 6 years ago, that woman started to stand out there in front of the White House. And she hasn't left. In 6 years, she's been out there. It's commitment. It might seem crazy to us. It might seem ludicrous. But in the end, you have to say the kook's committed. All right? Whatever. Okay, you know, I think about also these Arabs. These Arabs that go on these suicide missions to blow people up. You know, they just drive along in a truck filled with tons and tons and tons of explosives. And they drive this truck knowing that in a few minutes they are going to be blown to bits. Just blown to smithereens. And never, you know, there's not going to be enough left to, you know, to put them in a teacup, just boom. And yet, they do it. Now, again, we might disagree with why they're doing it. We might disagree with what they're doing, but we are talking about commitment. Any of you here feel strong enough about something ready to blow yourself, the Kingdom Kong over? You feel strong enough about that, about anything? We're dealing, again, with commitment. Now, I once read a story. I once read a story about a concentration camp. where they had these Jews in a concentration camp. And it was a day in the camp when they were killing babies. They were killing children. And there was a prisoner there, and he told the story that he was standing there working, and there was a line of women, or there were these people in a line, and there was a woman there. And the woman was in this line, a Jewish woman, a prisoner. And she turned over, and she turned around, she looked at one of the people standing in line, and she said to one of the prisoners, "Give me a knife. I want a knife." And the prisoner said, "Hey, don't worry. You know, you're going to meet your maker soon enough anyway." Because he thought she was going to kill herself. And the Jews, just, you're absolutely forbidden in Judaism to kill yourself. And she says, "I want a knife." And he says, "Just wait." And then there was a German guard standing there. And she said to, she just looked at this German guard, and she saw that the pocket knife the guard had. He had a pocket knife. And she looked at the guard and said, "Give me that knife." And the guard, surprised, and for some reason, he handed this woman the knife. And the woman went over, and on the ground was like a blanket. And the woman opened the blanket up. And inside the blanket was a little baby. Okay, just a few days old. And the woman took that knife and she circumcised this little baby. And then she held the baby up. She held the baby up because she knew that they were going to kill it. She held the baby up and she prayed to God. And she prayed, "God of the universe, you have given me a healthy baby. I am returning to you a wholesome, kosher Jew." And then she handed that guard back his knife and then handed him the baby to kill. Now again, this might seem ridiculous to us. It might seem, doesn't make sense to us. But again, we were talking about a commitment to a belief. I don't care whether the belief was Judaism. I don't care whether the belief was being against nuclear war. I don't care if the belief was against Israel, whatever. We've got people here who were committed to something. You know, there was a time in my life when I was committed to something. Committed to something as deep as, I say almost as deep as these people, where I wasn't ready to blow myself to smithereens over it, but I was definitely committed to it. And this was writing fiction. Doesn't sound all that thrilling and exciting, but I'm telling you, when I was young, I was determined in my life that I was going to write fiction. I was going to do nothing. Ever since I was a little kid, I knew I wanted to write novels and write books. I've got generations of writers in my blood. They go back to generations, 2-3 generations ago. Journalists, editors. I've got novelists in my family, people in the publishing work. I mean, ever since I was a little kid, I mean, I just wanted to write. I mean, when I was a teenager and I was young, my friends were out playing. I would sit home. I was a skinny kid with big feet and glasses. And I'd sit around. I would read novels. I would read 2 novels a day. I just devoured it. And I knew I was going to write fiction. I knew ever since I was little, this is all the thing I was going to do. By the time I was 19 or 20, I mean, I was firmly committed on this path to writing fiction. Now, when I was in college, my senior year at college, I started to work on a novel. I decided, I was maybe 21 years old, said, "I'm going to work on writing this book." So I started this book, and I spent 8 months writing on the book. And when I got about 8 months into the book, I realized that I had come to the point in the action of the book where I should have started the book to begin with. In other words, everything I had written up to that 8 months was fine and dandy, but it brought me up to the point where, hey, this is where the book should have begun. And you know what I did? I just threw out everything I wrote up to that 8 months and just started from that point there. And I didn't care. I was determined I was going to write this book. I was going to make it as good as I could do it. I knew this was the only way to do it right would be to start it here. So I threw out all that other material and just started to work from there. Now, at school, at college, I kept my grades decent. I really wasn't interested in going to college anymore. I wanted to write this novel. But I kept my grades decent, and I, you know, ran around and did things that you do in college. But my main goal was writing this book. And I finished school because I knew my parents wanted me to work on the book. I mean, they wanted me to finish school and so forth. So anyway, when I finished college, I had put about 2 years into this book, and I even had an opportunity to get a job teaching at a college, teaching English and work on a master's degree, but I don't want to do it. I just wanted to put everything into this book. So at one point, I had a little bit of money left, and I ended up going over to Europe, and I just went over to Europe to work on this novel. I mean, I was just totally consumed by this book. And believe it or not, one of the places I wound up on an island, in a Catholic monastery off the coast of England. Okay, and I figured, well, you know, it's a monastery, it's an island, there's not much going to be going on around here, but I figured this way I can work on this book. Because I was dedicated, I was committed to writing this novel, and I figured in a Catholic monastery off the coast of England, there's not going to be too many distractions. Well, it didn't work out. The monks threw me out, and that didn't last too long. Well, anyway, I ended up just hitchhiking all the way through Europe, all the way out to Europe, and I wound up in Israel, and I wound up on a kibbutz in Israel, and I just started to work on this book in Israel. Just work on the book. I had an ideal situation where I could work maybe 5-6 hours a day, and the rest of the day was free. So I lived out in this farming community way out here in the middle of nowhere. I had no possessions. I mean, I just didn't have a phone, I didn't have a car, I didn't have this little teeny room. You know, I owned nothing, but I didn't care. I had to, you know, work in the fields or whatever. I didn't care because I was in an ideal situation to just work on my novel. And the novel was a story of a relationship between a 17-year-old boy traveling through Europe with a little 7-year-old girl. And this was just the story of their adventure, so to speak, and things that happened to them. And as the book progressed, I realized more and more that was really about my own family life and so forth. Because it's very complicated writing a novel. But the point was, this book consumed me. It was everything. I mean, I could spend a week on one page of the book. I mean, what I would do is, I would sometimes have a vowel sound chart on my wall of high vowel sounds and low vowel sounds. And if I wanted to have a scene in the novel where it was an exciting, uplifting scene and there was energy and so on, I would look at my vowel sound chart and have all these high vowel sounds. And I would purposely work to try to put words with these high vowel sounds in the paragraph or the scene. Well, I mean, most people aren't even, or people reading the book wouldn't even be aware of that. But the point is, it made a subtle effect that, you know, the reader wouldn't even be aware of. Now, but the point is, to do that, it takes a lot of time, a lot of work. But I didn't care. I mean, I struggled hours and hours, days, weeks, over pages of this book. But I didn't care. I loved it. I mean, it was my... I can't explain how much satisfaction I got out of it. And I was pouring everything into this book. My friends were becoming... They were going to law school, or they were becoming doctors, or they were going into business. They had all this secure future in front of them. And yet I said, I don't care. I mean, I'm going to write this book. I'm going to write fiction. I don't care what. Then at one point, I ended up leaving Israel and hitchhiking up through Europe because part of the novel took place in Scandinavia. So I ended up hitchhiking through Europe. I mean, I just had a backpack on my back. I had a copy of the novel with me. And I mean, hitchhiked through Europe in the summer all the way through Yugoslavia. I mean, in the heat, and the people spit at you out of their cars, and the truck drivers throw beer bottles at you. I mean, it was a long haul hitchhiking all the way from Athens all the way up to Denmark. But I didn't care. I didn't care. And I got up to Denmark. I hardly had any money on me at all. And I scraped here and there to try to get money to live so I could write this book. I mean, I was like a slave to this novel. But it consumed me. But I didn't care. All I saw in my life was writing this book. And I loved it. I loved doing it. I loved to sweat over every syllable, every paragraph, every word. Just I was really into it, obviously. All right. Well, anyway, when I hitchhiked up there, I used to have to sleep on the side of roads, in the back of trucks. I mean, it was just, you know, hitchhiking was fun in some sense. And then I got hassled by a queer one time. And, you know, I mean, this guy picked me up. I don't want to go into that whole story. I'm not going to, you know. I mean, I'd stand on the road. It would rain on me. It would rain, you know, and so forth. But I didn't care. I mean, I just wanted to write the book. And I knew I had to go to Scandinavia to work on the book because that's where the book was taking place. Well, anyway, I stayed in Israel for a while. Then I came back to the States. I had put 2.5 years in this book. And I came back to America. And I went back to the town that I lived in and was just still consumed with writing this book. Over 2.5 years now, I had put in this novel. And I went back to this college town that I lived in, and I got a job. I got a job in this driving an ice cream truck. I mean, 2 or 3 days a week, I would drive around selling ice cream. I knew this poison. This stuff was these Slurpees. You know, that wasn't ice cream. It was the syrup you squirt out on this ice and you sell it to these kids. I mean, it was the stuff. I mean, I wasn't eating the stuff, but I'd sell it to these kids. But anyway, I mean, that was all I needed. I mean, I just managed to give me enough money to eat. And there were times I would even go to a soup kitchen and eat out of a soup kitchen because I didn't want to work hard. I wanted to write the novel. I just wanted to survive. I mean, I would have been content to have lived in a cardboard box as long as I had my typewriter and the paper and could have worked on this novel. Anyway, I just was working on the book and got a lot of satisfaction out of it. And I was determined. I knew that in the end, I might never be a famous writer. I might not ever make. I might be starving my whole life. I might not ever be accepted as a great novelist, as a great writer. I mean, I realized all these things. I realized, you know, the chances are of you getting your first book published. Then if you get the book published, you can't eat. Most people can't survive on it. But I didn't care. I figured I had nothing else. There was nothing else in my life to live for other than writing this book. But you'll never guess then what happened to me. You'll never guess what happened to me just after 2.5 years of working on this book, because I was committed to that book. I was committed to writing that novel. It was 7 o'clock in the evening. I had taken my ritual evening walk to a cafe, because I used to love to sit in cafes, you know, and just drink coffee and talk politics or philosophy or whatever, art writing with people. And I walked to this cafe and I walked back to my room. I was 23 years old. Okay, and I walked back to my room and I sat down in my room to start writing my book. Over 2.5 years in the book, I had reached the point where I knew I was over the hump. I knew I was going to get this book done in maybe 2 more years. Okay, and it might seem like an awful long time, but I mean, I wanted to write art. I wasn't just trying to crank out some trash. I mean, I was deadly serious about putting everything into this. And I sat down. Now, up to that point, I had had some experiences with God. I had been a seeker. And I had some heavy experiences that let me know that, hey, maybe God was out there. But you know what happened that night? I was in that room. I was by myself. And that night, the Spirit of God came to me. And you know what He said to me? He said, Cliff, you have been playing with me long enough. If you want me tonight, burn that book. God told me, if you want me tonight, burn the novel. Now, to tell this story, people look at me sometimes when I tell this story and they sort of look at me out of the corner of their eye. But the problem was that not that this book was evil. There wasn't anything inherently evil about the book. The problem was that that book was my total commit. I mean, I was totally committed to that book. That book was my God. I mean, I was ready to give up everything, anybody. I had pretty much done it, forsaken anything for that book, because it just consumed me totally. And yet that night, God was telling me, burn the book. See, because it was so important to me, that's why it had to go. Because God has to come first. And I can remember, I can't tell you the anguish that went through me that night. The anguish that cut through my heart. Because I had really been a seeker for truth. I told myself years ago, I said, I wanted to know truth no matter what it was going to cost me. And that night I realized what truth was going to cost me. And I remember I just sort of pleaded with God that, hey, let me just finish this book and then I'll give my life to you. And I went, and He said, no, if you want me, burn the book. And I went through this long wrestling with God, and I went out in the streets that night, and I just, you know, was walking the streets, and I was crying in one sense, because that was all that I had in the world. I had absolutely nothing else, because I put everything in to that book. But at the same time, I was a seeker for truth, and I wanted truth. Anyway, to make a long story short, that night, I took that manuscript. That book that, I'm telling you, it was everything to me. And I put it on a hot plate in my room and I just burned it. Burned that novel. And that, when that novel was burned, I had absolutely nothing left in the world. Matter of fact, the next day I had gone over to some Christian people. And I was talking with some of these Christian people. And I said at one point, because I wasn't a believer, I'm Jewish. You know, I know this Christian stuff. You know, and I remember I was talking with these Christian people, and one time I thought, what am I doing here with these people? And I jumped up out of my seat, and I was going to run home. But then when I stood up, I suddenly remembered I had nothing at home. The only thing that I had were the only thing that I had at home was that book, and that was just a pile of ashes on my doorstep. That's all I had, and I sat back down. And I can honestly tell you that in the 7 years since I burned that book, I have never, never for one second have I been sorry. Never for one second, because that was the night that I gave myself totally to Jesus. That was the night where I made a total, complete commitment to Christ. I could not have given God anymore. I suppose I could have blown myself up if that's what God wanted. I could have given God more, but I couldn't have given any. I had nothing else left to give to God that night. You know, and it's interesting, because at times after that, I wish today that I had a book to burn like that every single day. Every day, I wish I could go through almost that same experience. Now, I'm not talking to you about salvation by works. This has got nothing to do with earning your way to heaven, being obedient to heaven. Hey, God, I burned this book. I'm righteous enough. Now you have to take me to heaven. It's got nothing to do with that at all. What it's got to do with, it's is commitment. Burning that book was admittedly a dramatic outward manifestation of a commitment to God. And I would like every day in my life to be in a situation where I can make, manifest, or be in my heart, have that same kind of commitment to Jesus every day of my life, because that's the only way it's going to work. It's the only way Christianity is truly going to work. You know, for a long time I tried to find a text to describe this experience. And I found the text one day, Colossians 2:16, and this really, really hit me. Listen to this text. As ye have therefore received Jesus Christ the Lord, so walk ye therein. You see, you really can't receive, listen to this again, as ye have therefore received Jesus Christ the Lord. That night was the night that I received Jesus. And the only way I was really able to receive Jesus was by an absolute, total, no-holds-barred commitment all the way. If you do it any other way, you're not with Jesus, you're with the devil. No, I mean, there's no middle ground. As you have therefore received Jesus Christ the Lord, so walk ye therein. I mean, I received Jesus that night by that absolute, total commitment to God. And I know the only way that I can continue to be with Jesus, to truly be with Jesus, is to continue that absolute commitment. And that's why he says, so walk ye therein. You know, Jesus said you must be born again. You know, what does birth signify? I mean, it signifies something brand new, something just totally new. I mean, it's something that's part of something else. It's a whole new experience. It's something brand new. You know, I once had a friend of mine overseas, and his wife was acting kind of funny. So I said, is your wife pregnant? And he said, he was a foreigner, he said, well, just a little bit. You know, and I realized, because he meant to say just, she was just new birth. I mean, just early on in her pregnancy. But the point is, it's something that's total. Either you're totally pregnant or you're not pregnant. You're not a little bit pregnant. No, either you're totally with Jesus or you're not. There's no middle ground in this situation. Now, the point I'm trying to make is that total surrender that night when I burned that book, it didn't end that night. The total surrender, the commitment to Jesus, it doesn't end with one, you've determined one day you're going to make a total commitment to Jesus, and then you go on your merry way. It doesn't work that way. As ye have therefore received Jesus, Christ Jesus the Lord, so walk ye therein. You know, so many times I pray, So many times I pray to God, say, Lord, don't let me fall into a half-committed relationship with You. I mean, the church is filled. This church is filled with half-hearted, committed Christians. That's why we're so dead. I mean, the Adventist Church in North America, it's dead. We can have all our slogans and all the things that we want to do and these programs and this and that. And that's fine. We should do it. But and you kids know what I'm talking about. It's dead for the most part. There's no power for the most part. And the reason is because we've got a church with 3/4, 98%, 28%, 99.9% committed Christians. Well, it's useless. It's useless. You're better off not even being in the church than just being halfway committed to the Lord. So you people know what I'm talking about. You meet some of these people. They can get up on the podium and they can say all the right things. They can pray the most beautiful prayers. And they can make the nice appeals for this and that, or for camp meeting, or they can say all these wonderful things, and you look at them and they seem so nice and Christ-like and holy. You've seen them all. But then when you get to really know them, and see what they're really like, you can see behind the facade. You can see behind all that. And they really can turn you off, don't they? They can really, really turn you off. You know what the problem is? The problem is there's not total commitment. If a person is absolutely, totally committed to Jesus, if you're absolutely totally committed, you're not going to see that. But instead, you've got people who are 98% committed to the Lord or whatever. And what is the result? Well, we see the problems. You kids, probably better than anyone, have seen it. Better even more than I am, because you've been raised in it. You can see that stuff. You know, Ellen White herself warns, she says, unconverted Christians are the biggest stumbling block in this whole church. That's the biggest problem that we face as a people. You know, Jesus in the book of Revelation, you know what Jesus tells us in the book of Revelation? He says, I know thy works, that thou art neither cold nor hot. I would that thou were cold or hot. So then because thou art lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will spew thee out of my mouth. You see what Jesus is saying? You would think, wouldn't you think that being a lukewarm believer, you know, coming to Sabbath school and coming to church and going through the motions and not doing this and not doing that and so on. But, you know, you don't really care. Wouldn't you think that would be better than rejecting it all totally? And yet that's not what Jesus says. Jesus said, I'd rather have you cold. I would rather have you hot rather than being lukewarm. I mean, He would rather have you hot, no question about it. But the point is, unconverted, if you're not totally committed to the Lord, you're better off just not even being in the church. Because what'll happen to you, you look around in the church, and I'm sure every one of you, you've probably seen people in the church who are what I'm talking about. I talked about that last night, the hypocrites. You've probably seen someone get up here and speak so holy and speak so righteous and then this and that, and they say such wonderful things. Then you see them at home or you see them in person and you see the kind of people they are, and it turns you off. It turns me off. But you know what'll happen? You know what happened? What will happen? If you people here, you might decide, well, I know this is the truth and I'm used to, or I know, you know, this is what I was raised in, and I'm used to living this way. You can go on that way. You can go on the way, and you can live that way, and you can stay in the church and still be so proud because you could be a statistic that they have. See, we haven't lost all our young people. Some of them are still in the church and so on. They can be proud that you stay in the church, and you'll go to Sabbath school and you'll put your kiddies, you know, in cradle roll, and maybe you'll be an elder in the church, and you'll keep, you know, you won't eat pork, you know, and so on, and you'll have the outward form and you'll feel like you're a believer and everything is fine and dandy. But what'll happen is one day, some other young person like yourself, like you are right now, they'll see what you're really like. They'll see what you're really like. And you'll just turn them off. And you'll push them away as well. You know, it's one thing to lose your own salvation. It's one thing, especially as Adventists, with all the light that we have been given. It's one thing to lose your own salvation. But then to be an instrument in causing other people to go out. I mean, I'm telling you, I don't know if people are even going to like me saying this. I'm telling you, unless you really want to go all the way with the Lord, Unless you really want to go all the way to the Lord, you'd be better off leaving the church. You'd really be better off. Because not only you're not going to help the church, you're going to hinder the church. And you're going to turn other people off. Now, the point I'm trying to make from all this, too, is just if wherever you're at right now, don't get discouraged. I don't care. I don't care how many times you girls have lost your virginity. That woke you up. See, I'll turn around on that one. I don't care. I don't care how many times you've taken drugs. Jesus will forgive you. Jesus will take you right where you're at right now. I don't care how many times you've gotten out drunk. Jesus will accept you and forgive you right now. I don't care if some of you girls have gone out and had abortion. Jesus will forgive you. He'll take you where you're at right now. In other words, I'm not saying, I don't care what your past has been. I don't care what you've done in the past. Doesn't matter. I've done a lot of bad things too. But I know that I am forgiven. Christ has died so you can be forgiven for anything that you've done. I don't care. Jesus will take you right where you are. He will bring you back. He will forgive you. He will wipe the slate clean. But my friends, I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to tell you something. Jesus will forgive you. Anything you have done, I don't care. I don't care. God promises me that we'll be forgiven. But you know something? It's going to cost you something. You know, we talk all the time the gospel is free, salvation is free. But I don't believe that. I don't believe that. It's free in the sense that you can't earn your way to heaven. It's a gift from God. But in a sense, it's not free. It's not free at all. What did Jesus say? Remember what Jesus said? Three words that I think are some of the most important words Jesus ever said. Jesus said, count the cost. Count the cost. True commitment to Jesus is going to cost you. If you want to be truly converted, if you want to be truly committed to the Lord, I guarantee you, it is going to cost you. It is going to cost you dearly to be totally committed to Christ. To have the kind of relationship with Him that really matters. Because if you're not totally committed, you're a waste. You're a waste of time. You're wasting your time. It's going to cost you. I guarantee you, it'll cost you. Remember Paul? Cost Paul. Remember what Paul said? He said, yea, doubtless. And I could all count but all things lost for the excellency of the knowledge of Christ Jesus my Lord, for whom I have suffered the loss of all things, and do count them but dung, that I may win Christ. You know, I had a friend one time, I met him. He was in the Yugoslavian army. He was in the army in Yugoslavia during the Second World War. And he wouldn't work on the Sabbath. He wouldn't work on the Sabbath. And they beat him. But he said, I'm not going to work. And they dragged him and they threatened him and they put him in jail. And he wouldn't work on the Sabbath. You know what they did? They took him out and they put him in front of a firing squad. How many of you here ready to die right now for the Sabbath? They put him in front of a firing squad. And they said they were going to shoot him. They were going to shoot him and he was willing to lose it all. It was going to cost him something. As it was, they just looked at him. You know what they said? They told me, they said, when they put him in front of the firing squad, they're going to get ready. They took the guns up. They're getting ready to shoot him. And he just stood there. I mean, I'm sure he was scared, but he was going to do it. And then they put the guns down and they looked at him and said, you're crazy. You know? And they just put him in jail. He spent his time in jail in the army. But see, it cost him something. You know, around here, it doesn't seem to cost you much to play Adventist. You can play church. You can go to church. But in the end, if you want to be truly committed to Jesus, if you want to be truly committed to Him, it's going to cost you a lot. You know, when I meet young people, or I meet even old people, and I ask them, were you raised in the church? And they say yes. You know what I say? I say, well, so you can get to heaven too, but it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be easy. I feel sorry. I feel sorry for you young people. I really do. I am so thankful. I am so thankful that I was not raised in this church. I mean, I have problems in my life that I would have. I mean, you look at a guy, I mean, I used to smoke pot with my parents. Okay? Just to give you an idea of the kind of background I came from. Okay? And I have problems in my life today that I wouldn't have had I been raised in a Christian home, had I been raised in an Adventist home, because you don't understand what you've got. You don't understand. You don't have the vaguest idea, 90% of you, probably 99% of you, of what you've got. And the devil has done such a good job. He has done such a good job of just doing you people in. So you know, the devil is doing most of you in, whether you realize it or not. You don't realize what you have. And he has done such a good job on doing that. And that's why when I meet young people and they say they were raised in the church, I feel sorry for you. I really do, because there's no way at this point now you can really appreciate what you have. I don't think you can really appreciate it because you've got to, you know, the church, they talk all the time. They talk all the time, the programs, they want to keep the young people in the church because they love you and they care about you. And they want to see you stay with the Lord. But I realize in the end, they don't have anything to give you. You know why? Because most of them don't have it themselves. And they're trying to keep you in the church by giving you this and giving you that and so on. And it's just a bunch of hollow words for the most part. But as I said yesterday, you yourselves, if you want to get serious with God, you're going to have to do it on your own. Not looking to anyone else or depending on anyone else. But it's going to cost you. Now again, you can play your games. You can play your games and go to Sabbath school and go to church and make your parents happy because you decide to stay in the church and to do this and to do that. But I have more respect. I have more respect for the people who decide, hey, I don't believe it. It's a farce. I want out. I have more respect for them than for those who stay in half committed, half baked, because they become like everybody else. And they turn people off. And that probably every single one of you here has probably been in that situation where you've been turned off by people who say nice things, do nice things. You know, I mean, I've had the experience too. I could meet some nice Christian. I look up to him. I think he's great and wonderful. And then one day, I know he does something. He kicks a dog or does something that really turns me off. But as I said yesterday, is you've got to learn to separate what you see around you and Jesus. Now, I don't know where you're at spiritually. Any of you kids are at spiritually. I don't know where your feelings are, what you believe, where you're at. I'm sure we've got a whole wide spectrum here. But all I'm telling you is you might right now decide, hey, maybe I really want to believe. I want to do what is right. I want to be committed to Jesus, but I can't. I'm hooked on my rock and roll, or I like this, or I like that. But you want to serve the Lord, but you just don't see, you got peer pressure on you. This is what you have to do. Listen to me. I'm pleading with you. Just listen to me. For those of you who even care, I'm sure some of you just can't wait for me to shut up so you can get out of here. But for those of you who really care, but you're struggling, take whatever spark that they haven't killed in you, whatever spiritual spark might still be left in you, that your teachers or even your parents or whatever hasn't just squashed totally, because a lot of them have done it. Not kidding. They've got some great people who are really working for you. I'm not putting down anybody. I'm just saying we know the problems. But whatever little spark that you have left in you, and just take that, and whatever little bit of faith you have left in you, and you pray, go before God and say, God, please help me with this. I want to do what is right. Because I believe a lot of you want to do what is right. And deep down you know what is right. So you get on your knees before God or however you pray, and you pray and you say, God, please, I don't care how faint or how dim the little spark is in you, but pray for God to build that up. Pray for Him to just give you a more of a desire to follow Him or to serve Him, because I'm telling you, the devil is doing you in. I mean, it's hard words, you don't want to hear that, but he's doing you. But see, Jesus is stronger than the devil. The power is there. Every single one of you, God can do. You have such an advantage over the world. You have so many advantages in so many ways, having been raised in this message. And Satan knows that, and that's why he's working so hard. That's why they lose 70% of the young people in the church. They go out, and the 30% who stay, I could say 70% of them would probably be better off if they weren't there anyway. And I mean that. What this church needs is totally committed people. And you have an opportunity. You're still young. You've got your whole life ahead of you. You're going to make decisions in your life now. You're going to make decisions right in the next few years that can profoundly affect you for eternity. Eternity, that's a long way. That's a long, long time. Eternity. What does it cost? Remember Jesus said, what does it gain a man if he gains the whole? What good does it do a man if he gains the world and he loses his own soul? See, a lot of people think it's a joke and it's fun. They can play their games, this and that, and so forth. But we're not dealing with the joke here. And I realize it's hard for you kids to truly understand that because you've been raised on this stuff. You've been, you know, some of you have been beat over the head with it. You know, I don't want anybody to look at me as an example of anything. You know, I look at myself. You're looking at a person, I'm just a miserable, wretched sinner who in his own pathetic way, I mean, I love the Lord and I love this message. And I love the young people in this church and it breaks my heart when I see what is happening. But God is not done with any of you. The Lord is not through with any of you. And each one of you here, you have a chance. You still have a chance to do it. But you're going to have to make a decision. And if you decide to make the decision, I'm telling you, you have to go all the way. If you go three quarters of the way, you have to be willing to go all the way with the Lord. Or forget it. Forget it totally. Don't stay in the church. Don't stay in the church. If you're going to just go and be halfway a believer, because you're just going to drag the church down even more and more. Well, I'm going to end on a final note. Final note about total commitment to Christ and what it means. You know, it's funny, I burned that book 7 years ago. That was a total commitment to the Lord. I mean, I stress this. I'm not wanting anybody to look at me for anything, but I know I gave it all to the Lord that night. You know, and it's funny, writing was my life. It was the only thing that mattered to me. And when I burned that book that night, I realized I might not ever write again. And that put a pain through me. I mean, it pierced my soul because that was all I trained for. That was all I cared about. You know, I burned that book and I realized that's it. Maybe never write again. But I'll tell you something. For the past 6 years, 5 years, you know something? That's all I do is write. So I want to find out. I told you tonight to count the cost. I want to leave you with one final thought. Because I spoke some strong words here today. I said to count the cost, what it means to serve Jesus. And you really got to count. I mean, to really serve. I don't mean playing Adventist. I don't mean playing that. That's a joke. I'm not talking about, I'm talking about what it means to really serve Jesus. Count the cost. But one final note, one final thought is count the cost of what it means not to follow Jesus. That's where I think even the bigger cost comes in. I'd like to close with prayer. Lord God, Lord, I'm just thankful for the opportunity to speak here. And Lord, I know some of them really could care less. They're going to do whatever they want anyway because they're just choosing. It's the choice that they're making. But Lord, I just pray for those who maybe deep down really kind of know that what I've said is right, what I've said is correct, and deep down they really want to do what is right. And Lord, I just pray that you'll just teach them what it means to really follow you. Lord, we don't need more people playing church in the Seventh-day Adventist denomination. We've got millions of them. Lord, what we need are people who are ready to go all the way with you and follow you all the way. Lord, we have to learn to count the cost. Jesus said that himself. Yet at the same time, we have to learn what it means not to follow you, what the consequences are. Lord, you have set before us this day life and death, and your plead with us, your plea, your cry to us is to choose life that both we and our seed may live. Lord, the choice is ours. You're not going to force anyone. You didn't force me that night to burn this book. You're not going to force any of these young people tonight not to do what they want to do. You're not going to force them to follow you. Lord, you love us too much to do that. So I just pray, Lord, I pray that for anyone here, even if there's just one person whose heart is open to the things that I've said, and that they truly, truly want to follow you, truly want to serve you because of who you are, not because of who they see in the church or what they see, despite of what they see in the church. I pray that you'll just really impress upon them the need to do it and the need to make a total commitment. I pray in the name of Jesus. Amen.
You have been listening to another special American Cassette Ministries presentation. This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. International copyright American Cassette Ministries, all rights reserved. To order CDs or audio cassettes of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 1-800-233-4450. International calls, please dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americancassette.org. There you will discover the largest selection of genuine Adventist preaching available. American Cassette Ministries is not a one-man band. It's an orchestra of outstanding speakers who are all on the same theological page. You can trust ACM. There's no compromise here. If American Cassette Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? Our email address is info@americancassette.org. We'll share it with the speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and financial support are important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.